The English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. Iran's leader denounces as outrageous the French president's support for blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Residents of a remote village in the U.S. state of New Hampshire cast the first Election Day votes after final appeals from President Donald Trump and his Democratic rival Joe Biden. And the death toll from the powerful earthquake that rocked Turkey and Greece on Friday rises to 100.
Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has slammed the French president's support for the blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei described Emmanuel Macron's backing of the offensive cartoons as outrageous. Iran's leader stressed that the move will be unable to tarnish the image of the Prophet Muhammad. He was addressing the Iranian nation during a televised speech on the occasion of the birthday anniversary of Islam's prophet. Ayatollah Khamenei said that France harbors savage terrorists who have killed Iranian politicians and people. He said that France also supported toppled Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein during Iraq's imposed war on Iran in 1980s. Ayatollah Khamenei said all these are instances of brutality which show the true nature of today's Western civilization. Political analyst Mohamed Morandi says the U.S. and France have a hypocritical view of terrorism, as both support terrorist groups in West Asia.
The United States is the country which is more than any other country in the world today, causing death and destruction in the Islamic world. We know that ISIS has been created by the United States and its allies. And we know that the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency at that time, General Michael Flynn, the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency, is the largest military intelligence organization in the world. The head of this agency admitted in an interview on Al Jazeera, of all places, that the United States took a willful decision to support these regional proxies and regimes in their support for the extremists. When the United States or Europeans talk about terrorism, they're being utterly hypocritical. The French regime, not only as Ayatollah Khamenei pointed out, supported the terrorist MEK organization, which murdered 17,000 innocent Iranians, which massacred people across the board, which would torture people with irons in their cells in Tehran. These terrorists are based in France. The French regime and other European regimes supported Saddam Hussein. They provided him with weapons and chemical weapons. So when the Europeans and the Americans speak about terrorism, human rights, democracy, it is all hypocritical.
Sentiments are still running high against the French president in Iran, like other Muslim countries, after he defended the publication of offensive cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. An Iranian daily has reacted to the French president's stance in a different way. Saman Khujuri reports from Tehran.
Sans doute plus dur.
In reaction to the stance of French President Emmanuel Macron in defense of the offensive caricatures of Prophet Muhammad, the Iranian daily Vatan Emruz published a cartoon of Emmanuel Macron represented as a demon, accompanied by the title The Devil of Paris. This cartoon came after a wave of angry protests and reactions swept across the Muslim world after the French president defended the Charlie Hebdo publication of the insulting Prophet Muhammad cartoon, declaring that France will not give up cartoons. The Macron remarks have triggered anti-French sentiments in the Muslim world, prompting calls for the boycott of French goods and an official apology.
I believe the republication of the offensive Prophet Muhammad cartoons is aimed at testing the unity of Muslims in the face of any sacrilegious act against their sanctities. The second point I think the French government is after is to make such insulting cartoons look normal and to promote hatred and Islamophobia in the world.
The publication of the cartoon of Prophet Muhammad outraged Muslims worldwide, but I believe the support of the French president for such offensive cartoons was much more insulting and indeed added fuel to the fire of Muslims' anger.
Daily Kayhan demanded that the French ambassador be expelled from Iran, believing that it would be the least thing to be done in response to Macron's insolence.
The publication of Prophet Muhammad cartoon shows that the freedom of expression is just a pretext in the hands of the French government and its allies to spread Islamophobia across the world.
Meanwhile, leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei in a letter has urged the French youth to question the so-called reason underpinning French President Emmanuel Macron's support for insult against the Prophet of Islam, peace be upon him, in the name of freedom of speech. After the message of the leader to the French youth, the French Instagram account of the leader's website was blocked. The move is viewed by experts as a double standard policy of the West towards the so-called freedom of expression. At the same time, Iran's president Hassan Rouhani has said any affront directed at the Prophet of Islam is in fact an insult to human values, morality and freedom. President Rouhani has said that supporting those who insult the Prophet of Islam amounts to supporting vice, desecration and extremism. Also in a statement, 240 Iranian lawmakers lashed out at the French government for the move. Moreover, Iranians from all walks of life took part in a protest rally in front of the French embassy in Tehran to protest against the French magazine Charlie Hebdo and the publication of an image of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him.
Iranians believe that fueling Islamophobia and hatred in the name of freedom of expression, which should serve understanding, empathy, and peaceful coexistence between human societies, is regrettable. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Muslim world is marking Unity Week with predominantly online events and ceremonies. As Said Purza reports, the occasion provides an opportunity for Muslim scholars to get together and discuss the most pressing issues affecting the Islamic world.
Declared by the late founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, the Islamic Unity Week is marked every year across the Muslim world. It's held between two dates of the birthday of Prophet Muhammad, one narrated by the Shia and the other by the Sunnis.
Brother, I'm a Sunni Muslim brother. They believe that 12th of Rabiul Awwal is the birth anniversary for the Prophet, and the Shia brothers, they believe that 17th. So during this 1 week, so he decided to introduce 1 week as a week of unity so all Muslims can celebrate this week.
The International Islamic Unity Conference, organized by the Islamic Center of England, saw multiple Shia and Sunni scholars tuning in from around the world to emphasize the significance of unity among the different Islamic sects in the face of growing hate and fear directed at Muslims whipped up by right-wing political leaders in the Western world.
They will get a chance to sit with each other, to sit together and talk about their misunderstanding. Sometimes there will be some kind of misunderstanding cause more problems. So this conference tried just to remove somehow this misunderstanding.
This year's event couldn't have come at a more opportune time, and its message couldn't have been clearer. It follows days of angry protests across the Muslim world against the republication by French magazine Charlie Hebdo of blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad and the French President Emmanuel Macron's support for the satirical magazine in the name of freedom of speech.
Although you are so powerful in media, but if we do something sincerely, that could vanish your plan. And Allah will support us to keep this great upper hand of the Ummah when they are united.
But how united is the Muslim world decades after Islamic Unity Week was first declared?
Although we have many conferences, still the enemies are constantly trying to disunite the Muslim Ummah. My opinion is that having this kind of conferences at least creates hope for those who are sincerely looking for the unity.
One thing the participants reiterated in unison was the rejection of takfir, in which one Muslim declares another Muslim to be an apostate. An example of that, Daesh and their terrorist offshoots. The speakers also discussed the complicity of the mainstream Western media in helping Takfiri terrorists spread their message of hatred and recruit members.
In a world where the forces of evil inside and outside the Muslim world are fanning the flames of sectarianism, disunity, and disharmony, events like this one at the Islamic Center of England are a hopeful reminder that unity among the members of the Muslim Ummah is attainable. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Election Day kicks off in the U.S., where Republican President Donald Trump and his Democratic rival Joe Biden are competing to enter the White House. Residents of the village in the state of New Hampshire have become the first voters to cast ballots on Election Day. A record number of more than 98 million people have already cast their early votes. Trump and Biden spent their final hours campaigning in swing states whose votes are crucial to elect the next president of the U.S.
Tomorrow, we can put an end to a presidency that has left hardworking Americans out in the cold. Tomorrow, we can put an end to a presidency that has divided this nation and fanned the flames of hate.
This was our final night prior to a very, very big victory. That was it. Remember, we left it around 1 o'clock in the morning. I got home. My wife said, now First Lady, said, you have to be kidding. We came home late, and then we watched a beautiful victory, and we're going to have another beautiful victory tomorrow.
National polls suggest a firm lead for Biden, but his lead is narrower in a handful of states that could decide the result of the Tuesday presidential election. The total of 538 electors are up for grabs. In what is called the Electoral College system, to be elected president of the U.S., a candidate must win at least 270 electoral votes. Giovanni Carvello in Miami says results of the U.S. presidential election could take several days to be announced.
Well, the tensions in Florida and in the whole United States are very high, and everybody is expecting, some are expecting some bad reactions from whoever loses tomorrow, or if we have the results tomorrow. Donald Trump that promised to build a wall in the Mexico border ended up building a wall and fence in the White House. That happened today because they also expect some protests if indeed he proclaims himself the winner before the results of this election that could take a few days. So, of course, nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow night. This race is very tight. And as you saw, he just a few minutes ago, he is still campaigning. He is in Grand Rapids in Michigan.
The death toll from a powerful earthquake that shook parts of Turkey and Greece on Friday has risen to 100. 3 days after the disaster, rescuers continue digging through piles of debris of collapsed buildings in search of survivors. Turkey says 98 people were killed in Izmir and over 1,000 others injured, while Greece has reported 2 deaths on the island of Samos. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, the epicenter of the magnitude 7 quake was some 30 kilometers off the coast of Turkey's Izmir province at a depth of 10 kilometers. The quake was felt in both the Turkish and Greek capital cities. The tremor caused a mini tsunami on the Aegean island of Samos and a sea surge that turned streets into rushing rivers in a town on Turkey's west coast. More countries across Europe are imposing stringent restrictions to contain a resurgence of the coronavirus. Nighttime curfew begins in Austria on Tuesday and will remain in place until the end of November. Universities and high schools will move to distance learning too. Also on Tuesday, a 2-week lockdown comes into force in Greece's second biggest city of Thessaloniki. Flights will be suspended and all places except schools will be closed. In Germany, the government has appealed to citizens to respect month-long shutdowns that took effect on Monday. Much of Portugal also faces a lockdown from Wednesday, while France is preparing to further tighten restrictions. Moreover, England is considering imposing a second national lockdown.
Faced with these latest figures, there is no alternative but to take further action at a national level. I believe it was right to try every possible option to get this virus under control at a local level with strong local action and strong local leadership. And I reject any suggestion that we are somehow slower in taking measures than our European friends and partners.
Some say this is too little, too late, though, and the lockdown will now have to be longer and harder as a result.
The scientific advisers said were necessary back in September. So the government has delayed and dithered. Just as in the first phase, where they were too slow, they've repeated the same mistake.
MPs will debate and vote on the new measures on Wednesday, with several Conservatives expected to rebel against what they call a disastrous course of action. The British public have been warned, though, that the lockdown could be extended if the restrictions don't yield results, threatening a not very merry Christmas.
If we ensure that all the steps that we're taking now are taken appropriately, we'll have an opportunity in advance of December the 2nd to review the progress that we're making, and in advance of December the 2nd, we can then communicate to those areas where some restrictions may be required, what they will be, and also other areas where we've managed to beat back the virus, we can explain where liberties can be restored.
Meanwhile, 16,000 people in Britain are said to have died because of the restrictions on healthcare brought about by the previous lockdown and following restrictions. It's estimated another 26,000 could die by next March. The government has defended the measures, though, saying many more would have died if the restrictions had not been in place. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The victim of a shooting that shocked the Austrian capital Vienna to the core has died from injuries. The death brings to 4 the number of people killed in the Monday attack. Officials say that a total of 17 people are being treated at several hospitals, mainly for gunshot wounds and cuts. They say 7 of those injured are in critical condition. Police shot dead 1 assailant during the attack. A nationwide manhunt is underway to capture other potential gunmen, with at least 1,000 officers involved. The Austrian Interior Minister says the attack was carried out by a sympathizer of the Daesh terror group. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz has called the incident a repulsive terror attack. The Iranian Air Force has conducted exercises on the second day of air maneuvers in the central city of Isfahan to enhance the country's preparation against potential threats.
On Monday, surprise nighttime operations were conducted. F-4 fighter jets carried out surprise carpet bombings of mock enemy positions on several sides. Carpet bombing involves a number of aircraft flying at very low altitudes at nighttime in locations where they cannot be seen or detected by the enemy. Carpet bombing is a difficult exercise, and it was conducted by our brave pilots for the first time in the world. On Tuesday morning, our F-4 fighter jets used modified AGM-65 Maverick missiles and Qaset smart precision bombs to strike the bastions of the mock enemy. Arash drones produced by the Air Force of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army and fitted with warheads managed to target mock enemy positions after flying a distance of 100 kilometers. Again, F-4 fighter jets struck projected targets with Yasin smart bombs. Then our Karar combat drones carried out operations. These unmanned aerial vehicles can fly at very high speeds. They have strong engines and are fitted with heavy bombs that used to be carried by our manned aircraft. This sends the message that Iran's air defense industry is capable of producing an unmanned aerial vehicle which is so powerful and can carry heavy bombs at different altitudes over long distances. The aircraft at the same time can conduct electronic warfare against the missile sites of the enemy and can drop bombs on projected targets with very high precision.
That's all the time we have for this edition of World News. So bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Birthday of the most excellent person. In the name of God, the all-merciful, the all-compassionate. Hello everyone, and our heartiest congratulations to you all on one of the most blessed days of the year. Today is the 17th of Rabiul Awwal, the grand day in the history of mankind, when God Almighty decided to bring into the world his last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Stay with us for a special program on this auspicious occasion, before start of which we present you Ayah 15 of Surah Al-Ma'adah in the Holy Quran, where God Almighty informs mankind, O people of the book, certainly our prophet has come to you, clarifying for you much of what you used to hide of the book, and excusing many an offense of yours. Certainly there has come to you a light from Allah and a manifest book. A detailed account of the Prophet of Peace is outside the scope of this brief radio program. However, God Almighty says in Ayah 107 of Surah Anbiya in the Holy Quran, You have not been sent but as mercy unto the entire creation. The one and only Creator also says about the best of creation in Ayah 21 of Surah Ahzab in the Holy Quran. In the Prophet of Allah, certainly there is for you an excellent exemplar for those who look forward to Allah and the last day and remember Allah greatly. So in view of these undeniable facts, what can mortals write about this dynamic person who continues to transcend history and all future developments? Historical accounts point out that on the eve of the Prophet's birthday, the idols that the infidel Arabs had installed in Prophet Abraham's edifice of monotheism, the Holy Kaaba, fell headlong. The forces of Jahiliyyah, whether in the Arab Peninsula or elsewhere in the world, witnessed events that heralded the end of the days of ignorance. History also bears witness that the sacred fire of the Zoroastrians that had been kept burning in Persia proper for over 1,000 years suddenly died down, to the horror of the Mo'beds. In Ctesiphon, which is modern-day Mada'en near Baghdad in Iraq, a crack suddenly appeared in the huge arch of the magnificent Hall of Audience of the Sassanid King of Kings. At the same time, 14 parapets came crashing down from atop Khosrow's palace. There were other portents in other parts of the world, that are outside the scope of this brief program, in which we intend to point out that none of the ancestors and ancestresses of the persons sent by God as seal of messengers were other than staunchly virtuous monotheists. This is confirmed by all respected scholars of Islam, whether Sunni or Shiite. Thus, it would be repetitive to say that he was born in the monotheistic Bani Hashem clan that was descended from Prophet Ishmael, the firstborn son of that great iconoclast Prophet Abraham, peace be upon him. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was thus the finest example of a perfect man in every sense of the term. He was a paragon of virtue and the most excellent exemplar of the human race. The Almighty distinguished him from all others by instilling in his sublime personality such fine qualities as modesty, truthfulness, kindness, patience, loyalty, honesty, courage, bravery, generosity, magnanimity, wisdom, and the like. By studying his lofty characteristics and the amazing simple lifestyle that he led with his household, daughter, son-in-law, grandsons, companions, wives, and others were able to learn valuable lessons from his conduct and accordingly mold our own lifestyle. Our society could never be an Islamic one unless we sincerely tread the footsteps of Allah's final messenger to mankind, heed his sayings, and emulate his practice and behavior, that is, his sunnah and seerah, as the faithful among his companions did. This means to desist from whatever he had forbidden and obey whatever he had bequeathed to us, especially his last and final public proclamation by the command of God at the memorable gathering of Qadir Khum, of the prime position after him amongst the Muslims, of the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. Entrusted by God with the universal message of Islam, the mission of the Prophet of Peace was to bring hearts closer together and removing differences and doubts, and to help bring the morally sound and peaceful society where everybody, including those that were not yet Muslim and still adherent to what they believed as the ways of the other prophets, should live in peaceful coexistence. His invitation to the people of the book and his debates and accords, for instance, with the Christians of Najran indicate this. The advent of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was foretold in the Evangel, the Torah, the Book of Isaiah, and the previously revealed heavenly scriptures, as well as in the religious textbooks of the Zoroastrians, the Hindus, and others. Parts of his prophecy is still preserved in spite of the tampering by interlopers that these books have gone through. For instance, in Deuteronomy, chapter 18, verse 15, we read the prophecy to Moses. I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren, Ishmaelite Arabs, like unto thee, and will put my words into his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. And it shall come to pass that whosoever will not hearken unto my words, which he shall speak in my name. In the Gospel of St. John, chapter 18, verses 7 to 14, we find the following prophecy of Prophet Jesus. I have yet many things to say unto you, but ye cannot bear them now. Howbeit, when he, the Spirit of truth, the Comforter, is come, he will guide into all truth. For he shall not speak of himself, but whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak, and he will show you things to come. He shall glorify me, for he shall receive of mine, and shall shew it unto you. For lack of time, we have to leave out more prophecies from the other heavenly scriptures, as well as texts of non-Abrahamic religions such as Zoroastrianism, Buddhism, and Hinduism, and suffice with what the Holy Quran says in Ayah 6 of Surah Saf. And when Jesus, son of Mary, said, O children of Israel, indeed I am the prophet of Allah to you, to confirm what is before me of the Torah, and to give the good news of a prophet who will come after me, whose name is Ahmad. In view of these facts, it is indeed futile and self-destructive attempt by the godless elements of our times to try to insult the Prophet of Islam through caricatures under pretext of freedom of expression, as is being currently done in France, by those whose fate will indeed be terrible, as God has promised in Ayah 57 of Surah Ahzab in the Holy Quran. Indeed, those who displease Allah and His Prophet have been cursed by Allah in the world and in the hereafter, and He has prepared a humiliating punishment for them. This ayah, which is the distant past, had sealed the fate of some of the most intransigent of the pagan Arabs, who never repented of their disbelief, as per their freewheeling ways of the days of ignorance, continued to mock the Messenger of Mercy despite the long respite God had granted them, remarkably refers to the impending doom awaiting the godless elites of the present-day Western liberal societies. The timeless wisdom of God's revealed words, as embodied in the last of the heavenly scriptures, are indeed applicable in every era and every place. This explains the Islamophobia tirade to which retarded minds have resorted under lame pretext of freedom of expression, in a vain attempt to distract attention from realities of their own degenerate societies by trying to tarnish the enlightened image of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. And of course they will not succeed. Neither the pagan Arabs had succeeded in blotting out Islam by labouring various accusations at the person who changed the destiny of the world, nor did the ever-rebellious Israelites succeed by their hatching of the most intricate plots against him, including armed battles and murderous attempts. As a matter of fact, in trying to ridicule the best of creation, whose visage no caricature can corrode, the Zionists, those slanderers of Jesus and Virgin Mary, who today hold the hapless Christian world as hostage through such devils in human form as Emmanuel Macron and Donald Trump, have exposed the chinks in their own rusted armor, that is, the myth of the Holocaust. Freedom of expression and action is among the basic rights of human beings, but this should not mean hurting the beliefs of anyone, especially since Muslims hold all previous prophets in reverence, and they do not even ridicule the mortals worshipped as deities by the Buddhists and Hindus, such as Buddha and Ram. Thus, in view of these facts, sooner rather than later, The present-day enemies of the Prophet of Islam will meet a terrible fate, since no one can escape divine justice, according to God's promise in Ayahs 8 and 9 of Surah Saf. Islam will eventually be the religion of all mankind. They desire to put out the light of Allah with their mouths, but Allah shall perfect His light through the faithless, should be averse. It is He who has sent His Prophet with the guidance and the religion of truth, that He may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
Debate. Hello, welcome to the debate. I'm Kavit Akwe. The former CIA director has said that the U.S. President Donald Trump is likely to put up challenges to the election results. Come election day, will Trump not accept the results? Will he, as he has said many times before, refuse to hand over power to the next president? In this debate, we will look at the country that claims to have the strongest democracy in the world and how it may be facing a very undemocratic president, and that this may be the most undemocratic president it may have had in its history. First, our correspondent Rami Mazahari joins us from Chicago to tell us what the mood is out there on the streets. Rami Mazahari, of course, John Brennan is saying something that the Trump himself has said in terms of not perhaps accepting the election results. Is that something that many Americans think about or is on their minds when they're out voting during this election time?
I think it certainly depends on your party affiliation, and it also depends on, you know, what kind of person you are. Really sort of a hysterical idea because there are checks and balances. I mean, you know, shock troops that would have to defend him from the army, from the other civil servants who would necessarily oppose him. It's something that really would be absolutely shocking. And I'm certain, you know, Republicans, you know, would want to uphold the system and would not permit, you know, Trump to do that. So, and I think this is also predicated on, you know, Trump being some sort of, you know, Castro type of figure who is willing to take a you know, machine gun up into the mountains and fight. I think Trump is really a lot of bluster, but certainly this is something that the you know, certainly the mainstream media has really kind of hyped the anti-Trump media, because it's a very sort of you know, sensational story, and they have many things, like, for example, the allegations of Biden family corruption that they have to distract from. And it's also a way for Democrats to encourage their voters. They're very motivated and surpassing Democrats. So this is, you know, this is a way to say that, you know, they have to have this sort of landslide victory. Otherwise, well, that's one analysis of the situation. But I really have, you know, I sort of take the view that this is something that has never, there's no precedent for this. Republicans are fundamentally status quo people who don't protest. And I think that, you know, if there is violence, it's going to be, you know, not from winning, but, you know, from, I'm sorry, not from Biden winning, but from Trump winning and from the left. It's going to be out there protesting. Republicans don't protest. However, 2020 is a year unlike any other.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Rami Mazahari there, our correspondent, talking to us from Chicago. Okay. Let's bring founder of the DCReport.org and author of It's Even Worse Than You Think, what the Trump administration is doing to America, David K. Johnston, who joins us from New York. David K. Johnston, welcome. Well, first, the topic that we have as an intro to this whole debate is how the former CIA director, John Brennan, has said that the U.S. president is likely to, quote, challenge the results of Tuesday's presidential polls. Do you agree with him?
He's already doing that. There are hundreds of lawyers all across America who've been deployed to prevent ballots from being counted, to challenge ballots that are coming in, to challenge election rules. For example, in Houston, Texas, the, I think, fourth largest city in America, under an order from the governor, there's only a single place you could turn your ballot in. So the local elections officials arranged for you to drive up in your car, hand your ballot to an elections official who would then put it in the box. And they're challenging that and saying all those ballots, about 100,000 of them, should be thrown out because the people didn't get out of the car and put them in the box themselves. So there's a very serious effort already to challenge the counting of the votes.
It says, one of the headlines, David K. Johnston, Trump says that as soon as Election Day ends, quote, we're going in with our lawyers. What is he exactly saying there?
Well, Donald is very eager to challenge the vote outcome, and that tells you something. Trump says he's going to win an overwhelming majority of votes. Well, if that's the case, then why isn't he eager to have all of them counted? I mean, it's completely counterintuitive to be doing what he's doing if you actually believe that he's going to win. And so, you know, in America, vote counting often takes days. I've covered many elections since the 1960s and, you know, gone home at 6 in the morning or after sunlight because they finally finished at whatever county I was at, the counting of the ballots. Trump has already declared he wants vote counting to stop at midnight on Tuesday. It's just ridiculous.
Okay, let's bring in Charles Ortel. He is a political analyst who joins us from New York. Charles Ortel, welcome. Tense times in the U.S. from whoever we speak to. Our intro was about John Brennan saying, former CIA director, that U.S. President Donald Trump is likely to challenge the results. What is going on here? Tell us exactly what you think is going to happen with Election Day, votes coming in, and if it's not in Trump's favor.
Okay, well, I'm happy to do that, but I think that when we look at the substance, the available evidence on the ground, and comparing 16 to 20, in 2016, Donald Trump was an idea with no political experience. In 2020, he has profound political experience. You can disagree with what he's done, but he's certainly accomplished a lot, gotten a lot signed into law. In 16, we had a candidate who actually went out and tried to win some votes, even though she, at the end, thought she had it blocked, so she didn't campaign vigorously enough. In 2020, we have a non-candidate. We have somebody who has, you know, barely left his basement. When he does, he speaks in gibberish. So if we're not going to have any fraud, whether it's voter suppression or by Republicans, in theory, or voter suppression by Democrats or switching votes, I say that Donald Trump should do better in 2020 than he did in 2016, meaning he should get more than 306 electoral college votes. If I'm predicting 340 to 350. So that's what I think is going to happen. I think if we get a surprising result that Donald Trump, let's say, is ahead on election night, but magically ballots appear out of nowhere in Pennsylvania and elsewhere, it's swinging it the other way, of course Donald Trump is going to contest the post-election day maneuvers as well he should.
Okay, that's the most important part there, David K. Johnston. As our guest there said, as he should. Isn't that what brings about chaos or perhaps some kind of conflict out on the streets with Americans? You know, because this is very serious stuff here.
Right out of Vladimir Putin's playbook. Vladimir Putin has said democracy is a joke and he wants to sow chaos. And these are the exact kind of things you see go on in places like Belarus. Ballots don't magically appear. Mr. Ortel is just making up nonsense there. He's never, to my knowledge, covered elections and studied election law or taught about elections. And the reality is that if you believe you're going to win the overwhelming popular vote, then you would want every ballot counted. And that's the opposite of what Donald Trump is doing. And I'll give you my prediction about this. It appears we'll have more than 150 million popular votes, a record in America. Donald will lose by a minimum of 16 million popular votes and probably 20 million vote margin. That doesn't mean that Joe Biden becomes president, because we do not elect presidents directly. We elect them through this electoral college mechanism. Trump could win another victory through the electoral college. But 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton and the two minor party candidates together got 11 million more votes than Donald Trump. He is a minority president. He only got 46% of the vote. The voting lines that we're seeing and the new registrations that we're seeing suggest very strongly that the numbers are going to be very much in favor of the Republicans. And interestingly, when you look at the races for Congress, it's very clear that a number of Republican incumbents are in trouble and are likely to be replaced by Democrats around the country. Probably at least 10 seats are going to switch over. That does not bide well for Trump. But if Trump is confident that the American people think he's a great president and deserves another term, then the simple question is, why aren't you making sure that every vote is counted? Why are you on very technical grounds trying to prevent the counting of votes, to make it difficult for people to vote, things like the one ballot box drop-off point in Texas rule?
Charles Ortel, I'd like to expand more on the last statement you made before we pass it on to David K. Johnston. I'm not criticizing you for that. I'm just wondering if that's the mentality and state of mind that you have. I'm sure many other Americans also have that state of mind or approach to the election results, that if Trump didn't win, then he should contest it, for lack of a better word. Isn't that going to lead to some kind of, I don't know if I should use the word chaos, but, you know, this is the vote, and this is an important vote. How are Americans going to feel, the ones that want to accept the results, but yet it's not in favor of Trump, for example? Hypothetically,
again, you know, you're putting me in a place where you're asking me to make an argument I'm not making. I think that the substance of what's on the ground, and with all due deference to Professor Johnson, I've been covering elections in this country since 2010 as a frequent guest across multiple media platforms around the world, including writing for many different publications. I studied this in college, and I've studied politics ever since. The playbook that we're talking about is a playbook that Barack Obama encouraged in Kenya when his preferred candidate didn't win, to sow mayhem and chaos and threaten the putative winner unless that putative winner would compromise to let his candidate come in. This is a playbook we've seen elsewhere. We've had other situations where, for example, Bill Clinton did not win a majority of the popular vote. That's because Ross Perot was in the election, but he did not have 51% of the vote, and yet he claimed a mandate. So I look at this state by state by state. I compare the results that I've seen in 16, in 12, with what I expect in 2020, and I think Trump will come out far ahead. Because I believe that, and I see the evidence with my own eyes, if we get a surprising result where the initial numbers come in that he's won Electoral College by a wide margin, but the states refuse to certify, particularly Democrat-controlled states refuse to certify, and then presto change-o, magically new ballots come in out of nowhere that are not necessarily exhaustively certified, of course Donald Trump should contest that.
Okay.
But David, I don't think that's going to happen.
David K. Johnson, another piece of news here. Double-checking on the validity of it, but it appears to be true and not fake news. Trump releasing an urgent statement on Democrat plans to delegitimize Election Day results. The Democrats are not planning on conceding the results of the election, no matter what happens. Now, this is the type of news that is being spread on the net. Now, whether true or not, are we looking at this polarization that in the way that the news is being covered and in the way that people are thinking when it comes to these elections? My point being, are people who are Democrats or Republicans actually at some kind of breaking point when it comes to the results coming out?
Well, I've argued for a long time that our democracy is in very deep trouble. We went through decades of low voter turnout. That's clearly turned around in this election, tremendously turned around. We've had a lot of disengagement since Watergate with Richard Nixon, where a lot of people just threw up their arms and said, I don't want anything to do with politics. And it allowed people who grow rich off hidden government subsidies, corporations that don't use their own capital but use taxpayer money to build factories and offices and things, to mine the government treasury for their benefit, which I've written best-selling books showing with specific examples and the statutes that are involved. And so the problem in America is people have, up until now at least, become disengaged from democracy. Donald Trump is not the disease in America. He's the symptom of a deep underlying problem with whether people want to live in a free society and whether they want to do the work of citizenship that's necessary for the liberties of the people to endure. And he has brought, I think, a lot of this to the fore, and we'll know when the votes are counted, and hopefully all the votes will be counted. We will know whether Donald Trump, in fact, as he claims, has this enormous popular support, or whether he does not. And a lot of people who are likely to vote for Joe Biden are not voting for Joe Biden. They're voting against Donald Trump. That will be an important thing to understand after the election. This could be a one-off, just as Donald Trump, if he doesn't get a second term, would be a one-off, and may not tell us about the future direction the United States is going.
Well, that's one of the things that Trump has said also, Charles Ortel, that he wants the election results out as soon as it can, that he's not going to leave it for the other results from the mail-in, for example, to come in. Do you think that the nomination of the latest Supreme Court Judge Amy Coney Barrett has something to do with the fact that he foresaw something like this happening? I mean, is that why he rushed or wanted that process to be rushed in order for the nomination to take place?
Well, I think he was within his right. He was the president, and the Senate was controlled by Republicans. He was completely in his right to go ahead with what he did do. Obviously, he believed, I would guess, that this appointment might help in a contested election situation. One quick point, though. You talked about fake news and things spreading on the internet. It was Nancy Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi, a very powerful person, who recently said that it doesn't matter what happens on Election Day, Joe Biden will be sworn in as the next president of the United States. How does she know that?
Go ahead, Devin K. Johnston.
Well, I think Mr. Ortel's taking that out of context. The operative word there was Election Day, but I'm not certain about that. And, you know, Charles is exactly correct that Donald Trump was entirely in his rights to nominate and the Senate to rush through in 38 days, making Judge Barrett Justice Barrett. But let's not forget that when Barack Obama was president, he was denied that right by Mitch McConnell. He had a right to appoint a justice to the Supreme Court, and the Republicans blocked that, as they did many other judicial nominees. And so I thoroughly agree that Trump had a right to do this. And in fact, if he gets a second term, I expect Justice Clarence Thomas will retire. And in November and December, we'll see another person appointed by Donald Trump to the Supreme Court. And that's entirely within his constitutional right to do so. But it is beyond dispute that Mitch McConnell and his supporters in the Senate denied Barack Obama a Supreme Court appointment he was entitled to. They wouldn't even give a hearing to a man who was a well-known moderate, a serious legal scholar.
We need to talk about the mail-in voting. Charles Ortel, you know, you have results that are going to come out, then you're going to wait for some of the mail-in voting, from what we understand. Now, I don't know how long that process could take. It could take weeks, according to even what the U.S. president has said. I'm wondering what's going to happen in those weeks or days or however length of time that's going to take for those results to come in. You could just imagine the media propaganda that's going to be behind that. What's going to happen? I mean, what are we looking at here in terms of how that's going to affect the way the American psyche, the ones who voted?
Well, if we go back to the 2016 election, almost from the instant that Donald Trump was declared the victor, the resistance rose up. And it was, you know, let's have recounts, let's have all sorts of measures to deny him being inaugurated, and then we all know what happens after that. This country is divided. There are people who love unregulated globalism and the corrupt fruits that the insiders get out of that. There are people who don't want experts to tell them how to live, who want to live in freedom. Some choose to live in the corrupt big cities. I unfortunately have to live here in New York City. Others are able to live in parts of this country where they're more red and open. So to say that there's going to be more division, as if that's due to Donald Trump or due to Joe Biden, it's just a fact of life. We don't agree how to run this country going forward. And this is a big test. People like me want to see unregulated globalism blown to smithereens. It doesn't work for the middle class. It doesn't work for laborers. It doesn't work anywhere except for elite insiders. And maybe Donald Trump is not really in favor of that, but I think what I believe is he is. And so we're going to see a struggle between those who love the status quo and those who want to see it torn asunder. And it's not going to be something we agree about.
Okay. David K. Johnson, Donald Trump has said many things that have shocked many, not only within the U.S., but around the world. One of the things that he talked about recently, not too long ago, is he suggested that he would negotiate a third term as president because he thinks he's probably entitled to it. What's your take on that?
Well, under the American Constitution, you get to serve two terms, period, end of story. Donald is, in effect, suggesting that he would engage in what I think could be reasonably characterized as a coup. Fortunately, in America, our military officers take an oath to defend the Constitution. They do not take an oath of loyalty to the president. And surveys by military publications show that the officer corps in the U.S. does not support Donald Trump. He has very weak support among our senior military commanders in the U.S. So I don't think Donald also has the skill to pull that off. He's not a very good businessman, as I've documented in my books and from the public record. And let me be clear, Charles is quite right that the globalization that we've gone through, which I have been one of the leading critics of in America, has been very badly designed to benefit a narrow group of people. And it is an important issue that Donald Trump has spoken out about, but he hasn't done much about. Our trade deficit is worse. Promises he made did not come true about what he said he would do, and all of that goes to the fact that he has almost no accomplishments other than his tax law. And as we just revealed at DC Report, he has essentially stopped the enforcement of tax law against wealthy Americans. The 24,000 richest families in America, only seven had their tax returns audited. Obama's audit rate was 270 times the Trump rate. What Donald has done is maintained a high level of audits for the poor. The audit rate for them is nine times that of his current rate for the richest Americans like himself. And criminal referrals have fallen 90%, and Trump's Justice Department has rejected 82% of those out of hand. Basically, the Trump administration has stopped the enforcement of tax laws against those people who, like Donald, have unverified income and have the greatest opportunity to cheat. I don't think that'll move any voters, but it does raise serious questions about the integrity of the Trump administration and how it favors the most elite economic families in America.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much. Political analyst Charles Ortel spoke to us from New York, and we also had founder of the DCReport.org and author of It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America, David K. Johnson, also spoke to us from New York. That does it for this edition of the debate. When we come back, the entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
لبيك اللهم لبيك
لبيك اللهم لبيك
لبيك لا شريك شريك لك لبيك
أشهد أن محمد رسول الله.
Call of Unity.
If you ask me, why do I love you? No matter where you are, we are the greatest Ummah. With the beating of our hearts, we are Muslims. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. There's no God but Allah. La ilaha illallah.